We're ready, right? Okay. Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of the Offside Musings podcast. My name is Oke Ndibe. It's my delight to welcome you to this episode. And on behalf of my co-host, Emeka Onyeagwa, we hope that you tune in, not only today, but for future episodes. Today, we're going to take a look at perhaps the most important question on the minds of Nigerians. And that question has to do with the expected judgment of the Court of Appeal with regard to petitions filed by the PDP and Labour Party against the declaration of Bola Ahmed Tinubu as the winner of the February 2023 presidential elections in Nigeria. So there are all kinds of speculations about the likely outcome of it. And all over Nigeria, people are becoming a bit anxious, a bit restive on all sides regarding this judgment and what it's going to portend for Nigeria's political development, as well as the development of legal principles as they pertain to elections in Nigeria. So it's my delight to welcome you. And by the way, my co-host Emeka just got back from Nigeria. In a forthcoming episode, he's going to be sharing his impressions of the country. But today we're going to focus on the likely outcomes of the presidential elections petitions. Yeah. That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I think that just as you said, wherever the judgment falls, the losing party or parties are going to ask the Supreme Court of the country of Nigeria to weigh in. So I don't know what you're hearing. This is one case that is both easy to predict in some sense, but also extremely puzzling for even legal experts. So it's easy to predict when you consider that Nigeria has a particular history, a particular precedent in such cases, that the courts have been extremely reluctant to overturn presidential elections once they have been declared and once the declared winner has been installed in office. So that has been the tradition, if you like. And so if we go by that, it would be easy to say that this case, this time around, is not going to be different, that the Court of Appeal is going to basically make the same ho-hum argument that the petitioners have not proved their case beyond a reasonable doubt, and thereby that they will sustain Bola Ahmed Tinubu in the presidency. So that's sort of, if you like, the easy call. But then this is one case where, as a result of all kinds of circumstances, right, that if there is going to be an occasion for a stunning departure from what is a tradition, that this is that occasion where that's going to happen. I don't know if that's your sentiment. But a number of people that I've spoken to, politicians, lawyers, and just ordinary citizens who followed the arguments in court. And you and I followed the arguments with some deal of attention. What became clear was that INEC had little or no leg to stand on in making the call that they made, and that there are serious questions, about the returns in numerous states that were made, that were declared by INEC, the discrepancies, and also whether Tinubu met key electoral requirements for somebody to be declared the winner of the presidential election. And so, so if there is one occasion, and by the way, I think that the Labour Party and its lawyers did a particularly impressive job of providing the election petition tribunal with, I would say, significant, if not overwhelming, evidence that the election was substantially rigged, and therefore that the declaration of Tinubu as the winner was manifestly irregular, if not outrightly fraudulent. So I would not be surprised. I mean, so many things have surprised me about this cycle of elections. How well Peter Obi did, I knew that young people came out and supported him, but somehow I believed the propaganda that young people will show up on the internet, but they will not show up to vote. It turns out that they showed up to vote, that they galvanized votes all over the country for Peter Obi. I continue to believe, based on everything that I have seen canvassed in court, I believe that Peter Obi indeed won that election and won it handily. So the question is, are we going to have a panel of judges who have the spine to give the correct ruling, okay? The ruling that is supported by law. So that's one question. The other question is, if Tinubu's ostensible declaration is overturned, is the panel going to then call for a new election? And if they do call for a new election, who are going to be the candidates in that election? Or are they simply going to then determine the rightful winner of that election? So these are my opening impressions.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of legal experts have chimed in. A lot of fair-minded legal experts all over Nigerian legal experts have chimed in and have said this should be an easy decision. Yeah, in terms from a legal perspective, in terms of the politics of it, which, as they say in America, the Supreme Court just tends to legislate where society is, or where society is, somewhere around where society ought to be. So the political climate is where people are going to be. Where will that be? Would the Nigerian Supreme Court be similar to the U.S. Supreme Court, for instance, which hasn't been the case of recent. Mm-hmm. But in terms of what most legal experts almost unanimously have said is it's fair-minded legal experts. It's an easy decision to make. So if you follow the tribunals, you follow the questions of the people playing defense, out that term I'd use this time around. So that's the APC people. They barely even put up too much of any defense, more or less expecting the results to be in their favor, right? So So that's one thing that it's going to be seen. I don't necessarily feel like people have it marked on their calendars that a day of judgment is coming. I do feel like people are waiting for the Supreme Court to have their say, and there will be, in my estimation, there will be either a level of relief or a level of some level of reaction. Either way, there will be some level of reaction for sure. It's not going to be, I put my money on that, it's not going to be a simple decision. Like, no matter what happens, it's not going to be a simple decision or a simple reaction like they've had since the return of democracy in 99, and maybe even before that. Going to be a lot more dramatic. How dramatic, I don't know, but it's not going to be simplistic. I'd put anything on that. So we'll see what happens. I don't know when their decision is going to come out. The entire zone of the activities there around the Supreme Court has been, there's been all kinds of people trooping in, both into the courts and on the streets. And it's a very well, and it's in the area called the Three Arm Zone. So it's a very, it's the same place actually. They're having a tribunal and the Supreme Court seats as well. So it's a well, it's a well, I won't even say it's not, they're not, there's not more security than there is in the Nigerian context, but there's a lot of security there. So I don't know what's going to happen. The case hasn't got to the Supreme Court. I do know for a fact that a lot of the judges right now are not even staying. Supreme Court judges are not staying at their houses. The excuse is renovations. The excuse is, well, the reasoning for some of them is renovations. If that's the reasoning, I don't know. I just know some of them are not even at their houses, at their official residences right now. So, I think they feel the pressure too. That's my own estimation. Whatever their distance might be, but I think they feel the pressure. I think everybody is anticipating. I think the anticipation is a lot worse than 3 months ago with the elections, February, February
February,
16th,
25.
25th, right? So it's when August, so it's a lot more than 4 or 5 months ago. So we'll see what happens.
You know, I mean, sort of a bad sign for me was that the judges declined to have the proceedings televised. Okay. It didn't all go well for the cause of justice in this case. One, because the trend elsewhere in Africa, in Ghana, say, or in Kenya, the trend has been to put everything on display, as it were, right? So that ordinary citizens would follow the submissions in court. Of course, there are finer details of law which, you know, it's not everybody who is going to understand them. Not even some highly educated people would understand some of the sort of the if you like, the minutiae of the details in this case. But I think that people would have had a sense of how the case was going, rather than depending on spin reports that have some level of spin from one side or another side, right? So the failure by the courts to adopt that openness, that transparent forum, I think was a huge loss. And so whichever judgment they come down with, there's already going to be that taint that there was something illicit you know, done behind the scene, especially if they uphold Tinubu's election as legitimate. So that's you know, just I wanted to leave it out there because that's something a part of the proceeding that really, really disturbed me when they started. The fact that INEC and the APC did not mount much of any defense is almost as if, on the one hand, you could say that they had no defense to put up. They had no case to make. But on the other hand, if you take a kind of dim view of it, you could say that they are counting on other modes to make their case for them, i.e. the use of financial inducement, you know, that they have the power of incumbency, they have the purse, as it were, of the nation, and that this could be distributed in such a way as to arrive at the outcome that they want. So that's another sort of factor that one is looking at. But then the country, I think that and of course, you know, if you talk to those who think that Tinubu's tenure is a fait accompli, they point to the fact that this man has changed the service chiefs, he's appointed ministers, he's assumed the chairmanship of ECOWAS, and so on and so forth. And so it's almost like he's moved at speed, considerable speed, to consolidate some of these changes so as to make the case that his government is here to stay. But I don't think that that's something that the judges should take into account. If, as they must find, and must be clear to them, there was manifest corruption, manifest rigging in the process that produced Mr. Tinubu.
Yeah, well, I mean, those arguments would just be for a court of public opinion, which is where a lot of these arguments, a lot of these conversations, this is where a lot of them, they've moved these conversations to find legitimacy to Tinubu government.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd also have them playing their hand strongly with the coup in Niger, which people, mm-hmm. Neither here nor there, but essentially I felt they felt the walls closed on them. So they had to make a strong stance, galvanize people, make people to explicitly come out in the court of public opinion, come out against coups. That's the way I felt.
Mm-hmm.
I almost felt there was a certain inevitability to a coup in Nigeria, which mm-hmm. I felt for a long time, by the way. So mm-hmm. I felt the only thing that was going was timing it was the candidacy of Peter Obi, because I felt for a number of reasons. So with the people around, whether it's the Tinubu government, just the Tinubu government, all the people around, it's not just the APC, but all the people around, a large part of it has been to come out, talk tough, make displays, be entertaining in some, to some degree.
Mm.
And a good avenue of that was the coups in Mali and in this thing, and they talked. I don't think they had any serious intentions of invading Niger. Not for 1 second. I don't even think they have the
wherewithal.
Yeah, I don't think it's in. It's not something stereotypical. It's just the truth. I don't think Tinubu, anybody around him has those kind of kahunas to do that kind of pull, that kind of stunt. They don't. Mm-hmm. They don't even remotely have it. And if you see Tinubu moving around Aso Rock, you see a very timid person that is literally scared of shadows. And a lot of his actions have shown that. So. It's not, it's mostly in the court of public opinion. It's trying to look for some path. It's the most interesting thing to me is this. I feel like they're trying to look for some path. I from the actions they're talking about trying to exclude Labour Party in a rerun. They've been very explicit. A lot of their people have talked about it from the get-go. Maybe people didn't understand that point when people would say, well, if Tinubu didn't win, is it the person that came third that won? Not delve. And some people sincerely just parrot that kind of line. But a lot of people do it from a top-down approach. This is what we're going to be saying. Because when you say that, you're timing a lot of things. You're angling for what you feel like. Okay, we all accept the elections were not perfect. It wasn't even elections, to be honest. Okay, it's all rubbish. Yeah. So let's do a rerun. The problem they have, and the problem people that they are trying to jump over, which probably easy to jump over being that it's Nigeria, is that on what grounds are they going to declare a rerun? Which from every legal expert I've seen, if you declare a rerun, you'd have to address the number of issues and you want to jump over, which it seems like that's where they're headed. You want to jump over the issues as to why Tinubu should not have been a candidate.
That's right.
It would be very interesting. I just don't see... But in Nigeria, I could see it happening. I could see people jumping over. I could see people coming out to say all kinds of things and making a rerun purely between Tinubu and Atiku.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, Tinubu would obviously win the rerun and more importantly, have legitimacy in the result of the rerun. So,
yeah. You know, but as you said, that's the whole question of whether Tinubu was a legitimate candidate. It's part of what's on the table before the justices who are considering this matter, right? So there is a question of his legal entanglement in the U.S. There's a question of his dual citizenship, and there's a question, quite honestly, of the fact that his VP candidate Kashim Shettima was running in two elections, so that would invalidate Tinubu's candidacy. Of course, the APC mounted. That's one of the few moves that they made, was to question whether Peter Obi was a legitimate Labour Party candidate as well. You know, so we'll see how the justices parry all those questions. But there's another element which I think is going to be key in how maybe the justices at this level, or perhaps the Supreme Court justices, will look at the question, and that has to do with the fact that Nigerians are paying attention to the verdict. And the Nigerians who are paying the greatest attention are young people. These young people are tech savvy. These young people know how to use information technology to monitor movements of people and of funds, of capital. And so these young people are capable of really embarrassing any judge, any justice who rules based on inducement. These young people are capable of releasing, doxing, as it were, some of these judges and their relatives, even hacking their bank accounts and so on, exposing illicit or questionable possessions that they may have within Nigeria, outside of Nigeria. So I think that attention by young people, you know, you were in Nigeria when some billboards sprung up, you know, where the judges were told that they were being washed for the judgment that they are going to give. Obviously, there was not more than that. You know, of course, the government went into a tizzy, the Tinubu camp went into a tizzy. But all they said, all the billboard said was, we're watching you. It didn't say who the watchdogs were. It didn't say it's anti-Tinubu people, but it says something that Tinubu's camp took it to heart and came out against the officials of the advertising commission who had approved these billboards and so on and so forth. So I don't know what's particularly wrong with people who say that they are watching to see how judges will rule in a case. But it would seem to me that the intensity, the fierceness with which the government and some other elements close to the government, Tinubu government, went after the perceived sponsors of those billboards to seem to me that there is a great disquiet in the camp of the justices themselves, that they recognize that. And, you know, the good thing also is that the young people have a long memory, much more so than older Nigerians. Young people have seen themselves driven, a lot of them, out of their country. They've seen themselves pauperized in their country. They've seen themselves pulverized when they came out in the NSAS movement. And so they were highly motivated when they came out in February, when they came out and voted, and sprung a surprise on Nigerian politics as it used to be. So I think that the young people have been quiet, but I don't think that they are quiescent. I don't think that they are going to just, you know, go to bed and ignore any perceived miscarriage of justice that will happen whenever it pleases the judges to release their judgment. Yeah, so, you know, so I don't think this is going to be the decisive factor by any means, but I think that it's something that is going to weigh on the minds of the justices as they consider a verdict, especially if they are going to consider a verdict that upholds a clear, illegitimate verdict, call on the election, that it will be at the back of their minds what kind of reaction the young in Nigeria, the disenfranchised, the majority in the country, but also the most marginalized segment of Nigeria's demographic. So I think that that's something that the justices are going to think about seriously as they craft their judgment.
Yeah, well, I don't know what they'll be thinking about. I have no idea. Going by Nigeria, I don't really put too much stock in people, public office holders, caring that much about what people think about. I just don't put that much stock in it. But who knows? It's not saying I know what the outcome is. I don't know what the outcome is. I'm just saying, going by Nigeria, I don't put stock in a public office holder sitting down and saying people think. I don't think so. The entire government, the last 8 years has just been one-way traffic, complete one-way traffic. People held their breaths largely in so many ways. People were under the weight of every kind of, a lot of people, not every single person, obviously, but the vast majority of people were holding their breaths long before NSAS. NSAS was just an embodiment of people holding their breaths for the last 8 years, 6 years, and then they held their breaths for another 2 years, hoping that there'll be some change. And for some people, there are some changes that they like or they feel better about. They don't feel it's the best, but Buhari was bad in so many ways that some people feel better in certain ways. But overall, if you're talking about Nigerian office holders caring or thinking or bothering about what people think, I think that's probably maybe 20 years ago when Obasanjo came in, people still had some care, maybe, even at that time. But now it's out the window. So, again, I don't know what anybody's going to do. I've got no idea. I was listening to, I need to recall the exact person I was talking about. Yes, I was listening to Donald Duke on Arise TV. And he was talking, the anchor was reminding him of a conversation they had in London, I think 2010 from that conversation. And Duke had spoken, which actually, to so many degrees, obviously he's way much older than me, but we're the same circles because his father was in customs as well as my dad. His father was senior to my dad. So I've had contacts with him. He can be a very insightful person from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, Duke said, talked about educating and empowering young people. That's what the anchor was reminding him about. Because if not, as we are going, we are all going to be living in complete prisons.
Mm.
So I think a lot of people are comfortable living in complete prisons in Nigeria at this point in time. I don't have any doubt about it. Because it's true, people don't, your typical Nigerian elite, Nigerian politician exists in the Nigerian space, yes, but every one of their needs or their family's needs is taken care of outside the country.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe their kids still go to school there, but if there's any kind of serious toothache, a lot of them don't even treat their toothaches in Nigeria. Yes, some of them do. Obviously, it's a toothache, but the majority of them don't even do that. So there is not that connection to the Nigerians. So there's just power capture, sit down where you are, have big fences all over the place, move around at all times with a bevy, a typical Nigerian office holder. Not even politician, moves around with multiple aides, no matter where they are going to, where they are traveling to. Said they are traveling overseas. I think that's the only exception, I think. So they don't have a connection to most of these things people feel like to a large degree. I even feel like the process at the Supreme Court is just being dragged out to wear people down. That's their hope. I don't think it's wearing anybody down for general information. I think if for anything, it's sadly given the current situation, it's making it worse. But I think in their thinking, it's wearing it down. Like I said, even if some of the Supreme Court judges, I'm not saying all of them, but a couple of them that I witnessed, are not living in their houses in the name of renovations. Again, I don't know why. If it's purely renovations, so be it. But they're not living in their houses purely in the name of renovations right now. And they have very slow moving for whatever. Again, I don't know how renovations always work everywhere in Nigeria, right? But for whatever reasons, they have very slow moving renovations. Why I emphasize that is I don't see how these are renovations, quote unquote, is going to be finished before any Supreme Court case is finished. So it's convenient. And again, maybe it really is renovations for some of these people. I don't know if it's all of them, but a few that I personally witnessed were having very interesting renovations. Put it that way. Again, I don't know. I'm just saying what I know. I don't know why they're doing it. You'd have to go and...
When you talk about renovations, do you know the nature of the renovations? Is it to fortify their homes or just to
lay new barbed wires on the fence, doing the gates, doing the driveways, doing extra barbed wires on one side of the fence, barbed wires on top of the fence, renovating inside the house, doing security fortifications in the house. This is the official residence, by the way. So it sounded like renovations, but it's almost like to some degree a rebuild, some degree. Again, I don't know. Maybe that's the way it works. I sincerely, I didn't go investigating anybody's mindset. Why happened? Why are you doing this? I don't know. I just know it's happening. That's all. So, and it seemed nice, timely coincidence. There hasn't been any new Supreme Court judge, so why does it? I think the last Supreme Court judge, last appointment. I need to go back and check, but it's been a while since they appointed
It's been a while, yeah.
somebody to the Supreme Court, right? So, again, I don't know if it's standard practice. I would have assumed that they would have been doing this since. So, all this doesn't really matter at the end of the day.
Yeah.
It's
Well,
tomato tomato. So.
When I talked about being monitored by young people in Nigeria as a possible factor, and I have to stress that it's a possible factor. I don't think that is by any means a settled question that is going to weigh. But I'm thinking that we live in a world where information is instantaneous, right? We do know that certain Western nations, including the United Nations and the EU, have withdrawn traveling privileges from some Nigerian officials, including justices, right? Based on their antecedents within Nigeria. So what I'm saying is that these judges must be aware that in a sense, there is no hiding place for them, that when they travel out of the country, that there are young people who can monitor quickly in real time where they are and can make life difficult for them, and indeed can make life difficult for their dependents, their relatives, and so on. And I'm not saying that their relatives are guilty. Every Supreme Court justice or every appeal court justice acts in his or her personal capacity. Their children are not involved in their judgments. Their husbands, their spouses are not involved. Their wives or husbands are not involved. But the truth is that if a particular judgment is given that flies in the face of the evidence that was adduced before the panels, right? And so the young people come to the conclusion, especially young supporters of the Labour Party, come to the conclusion that this was done on account of inducement of corruption. I think that they are capable, these young people, of wreaking some havoc on the sense of security, on the peace of mind of these justices. And of course, there's the added possible leverage of foreign countries perhaps being pressured by Nigerian citizens, old and young, living in those countries to impose travel bans on some of these justices if their judgment is particularly odious in the way that we know that Nigerian justices are capable or have a history of doing in the past.
Look, at the end of the day, is this right? They announced those results in Nigeria at 4 a.m. in the morning, and that particularly sticks with a lot of people. And at that point in time, I stress this: if Peter Obi had not said what he said, I'm not saying there would have been a revolution that would have toppled power, but it was headed down that direction. If Peter Obi hadn't said what he said at that time, it was headed to that direction. Now, would it have happened? Again, I don't have a crystal ball. I'm just telling you that the way when people woke up at 4 a.m., when people woke up at 6 a.m. in the morning to hear the announced result at 4 a.m. in the morning, there was going to be any word at that point in time, any, like, let's go, would have been, at the very minimum, in my opinion, Arab Spring, or maybe even worse. But people held back because of what he said.
Yes.
Whether people like it or not, people are still worse than before. Like, there was maybe, but worse than before. You know, people, Nigerians have just put everything on that. We put every single thing, doesn't matter where it is. Whether it's in the societal affairs, families, you know, we put all these things and we act like it didn't happen. Not in this case. This is front and center with people, top to bottom, left to right.
and you know what? I mean,
they're not letting it go.
Yeah. So after Tinubu was declared the winner, there was all this speculation that he would not be sworn in. Then he was sworn in. And of course, this emboldened his supporters, you know, to start, in some cases, taunting, jeering Tinubu's political opponents. But I think that what's happening in Nigeria today must have chastened a lot of people. You know, Nigeria is a space where, unfortunately, people make calculations based on some sentimental notion that they are part of this current of power, whether it is a religious sentimental reason that, you know, the person in office is a fellow Muslim or a fellow Christian, or the sentiment of ethnicity, where we feel you know, this is my ethnicity and it's my man who has got into office. In the end, we have to realize that a bad leader is bad for all Nigerians. Okay? A bad leader is bad for all Nigerians. A bad leader's policies do not exclude people from his religion, people from his church, people from his ethnicity, people from his state, people from his hometown, in the effects of those policies. Okay? And I think that there's already a reckoning of this fact in Nigeria, that in 3 months, and I know that this is a subject that, you know, you and I have already spoken about in our editorial meetings, about doing a podcast on, that in 3 short months, Tinubu has actually made many Nigerians to forget how harsh and difficult and harrowing life was under Buhari. We used to say that it could not get worse than Buhari. It's almost as if Tinubu said to us, just hold this beer for me, I de come, you know. And we're seeing it. We're all seeing it. It is not just the changes that is wrought in the economic sphere, because sometimes difficult changes are called for. It is the mindlessness with which he continues to orchestrate the dispensation of obscene privileges to a tiny elite, whether they are justices, whether they are legislators, or whether they are members of the executive arm of governance, you know. So we're all seeing it, you know. the level of desperation. You've just come back from Nigeria, and so we have an episode coming up where you and I are going to talk about what you saw on ground in the country. But from here, I haven't been to Nigeria in a few months. What I'm hearing isn't inspiring at all. It's not impressive. If anything, it is people are woebegone. People are just devastated by grim economic conditions. So that's another, not that justices have to make a judgment, give their verdict based on economic conditions. But when it was clear, when it is clear that this man did not win an election, when it is clear that this man should not, under normal circumstances, have been allowed to run for the presidency, when it is clear that we don't even know who this man who presumes to be Nigeria's president is, okay? We don't know his real name, as we continue to say on this podcast. We don't know about his academic record. We don't know about his criminal history. We don't know about his date of birth. So this is a total stranger, as it were, who's presumed to run a country. So, yeah. I don't know if you have any closing.
The main thing is people are anticipating what would happen, what the decision would be. For me, I don't see any peace if they validate the this thing. And I believe from everything they're saying, they've settled on, like I've said, they've settled on a runoff. That's the goal. That's where they're headed to. The only thing is, I don't know. I mean, it's not the goal that is the problem. It's the drama to the goal. Those that would watch soap operas back in the day, or who still do now. Mm-hmm. It's how do they get to that decision? They're already trying to paper through it. See how it works out. Mm-hmm. It would be interesting. I think even the mayor, however they want to get to it, and they say it's a two-horse race, which is what they would want to use to label people who are supporting Peter Obi.
Mm-hmm.
They would want to exclude Peter Obi, and then if there's any ruckus, they would say it's the Peter Obi people, which is what they've been doing for a long time. Not people who don't see. A large part of the people don't want either Atiku or Tinubu. They've got nothing. A large part of the people in the north don't have that kind of support for Atiku. Kwankwaso maybe. So some parts of the north. Yeah. Kwankwaso has real support. Atiku, not so much. Tinubu. Well, it depends on what your thinking is, but even Tinubu doesn't have that kind of. But if they can exclude Peter Obi, which they've been trying to do from the get-go, people thought it was just an upstart. So, you know, people have last 2 years all kinds of descriptions about the campaign. Yeah, exclude Peter Obi, you can effectively justify your takeover of power, because the Labour machinery has captured a large part of the people that want to vote and who showed up to vote. I was watching what they call this conference. They had a conference in Nigeria and a lecturer conference set up by some this thing, and it was on the news. And, you know, even this person made the point in the conference, Toye Falola made the point, mm-hmm. where you want to go to war when you are in a country of supposedly 200 million people and what 8 million people voted for you. You, to quote him, you don't have that kind of mandate.
And it's at any rate, you're going to war in Niger when Boko Haram has been ravaging Nigeria, ISIS in West Africa, the Islamic State of West Africa, has had a run of Nigeria. Fulani herdsmen have made Nigeria absolutely ungovernable. And in the southeast, Simon Ekpa's militia groups are shutting down businesses on Mondays and sometimes for a week at a time. And you cannot control the security situation in your country, and you are going to go on an adventure to a neighboring country to go and restore a president who, from all accounts, is hugely unpopular, you know. So, you know, it's all about, you know, it's reminiscent, really, of the U.S. just throwing money again and again into Ukraine when the country domestically is in massive decline, you know. Yeah. So I don't see how Tinubu justifies even sending one Nigerian soldier to die.
But I don't anticipate this Supreme Court decision coming out. Look, if it comes, again, I don't have any insight. I would be pleasantly happy if I woke up tomorrow morning and there was a decision. Hmm. But I think they would drag out this tribunal as long.
I suspect that they want the clock somehow to run out so that even if they give a judgment, you know.
Because the moment you give the judgment, it doesn't matter. We know it's going to Supreme Court already. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The moment you give the judgment, it goes to Supreme Court.
Yeah.
The clock is ticking. The Supreme Court cannot just sit down. And it's not going to happen. So they're going to. Mm-hmm. I'll be one of the most happiest and pleasantly surprised human beings. If I woke up tomorrow morning or the day after or the next day after that, and they give a decision, they give a judgment. Like, great, fantastic. Man, this guy's
regardless of how the judgment goes.
Doesn't matter. Might as well end this process. Let's move on to this whole this whole holding the breath thing it's what they are thinking they are doing, they are not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
They are bottling a lot of
tension
that needs to get out.
Mm-hmm.
So the sooner they figure
my
it out.
My fear is, exactly what you said, that whatever judgment they want to give, they want to diffuse. They think that they are diffusing the tension. And so when the judgment comes, you know, sort of it will be almost as if the nation, the resources of the nation will be so spent. So the people will be so tired that they will say, okay, let's find how to put Gary on the table the next day. But it's precisely because the economic situation and the social conditions are so grim, so dire, that people are actually hoping for some release. Okay, some, if you like, some welcome positive development. And if you waste their time so much and then you come up with a judgment that is patently in conflict with what people saw as the evidence adduced before the tribunals, you cannot predict how Nigerians, especially young Nigerians, are going to react. That's my prediction. And I'm willing to leave it there. And to thank again our listeners. It's been quite a while where, you know, my podcast partner has been traveling, and part of his travels took him to Nigeria for a lengthy stay. And so we're going to have an episode forthcoming shortly where he's going to give us a first person account of the kind of country that he encountered during his stay. So I thank you very much for joining us, and look forward to seeing you again. Bye-bye.